Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, June 16th, 2010. Tech News Today is brought to you by Ford and voice-activated Sync, featuring true hands-free calling, turn-by-turn directions, 911 assist, and more, available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. For more details, visit SyncMyRidePodcast.com. Hello, and welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Becky Worley.
And I'm Sarah Lane.
Behind the board is our self-described exhausted producer, Eric Lanigan. Welcome back from E3.
What day is it? Is this even the same week? I think I spent like 17 hours just straight.
We promise we'll let you sleep after the show.
Thank you.
It will happen.
After the show. But first, much work
but
to
not
do.
Till we're done. This is the show where we kick around the tech news stories of the day, try to make a little sense of it all for you. There's no making sense out of this AT&T Apple debacle. To summarize it, they sold 600,000 units of the iPhone 4 yesterday, but they don't know who they sold them to. That's 10 times higher than the first day 3GS sales. Unfortunately, tons of people couldn't get it to work on the web. A lot of people got confirmation emails and then later got emails saying, oh, no, you were wrong. We actually don't have one for you on the launch day. It's going to come later. There were people who logged in on the AT&T website only to find somebody else's information there.
Right.
Folks who didn't...
looked at the receipts, realized, well, that's not my address.
Yeah.
Oh, crap. Who's getting my phone? Which actually, now I'm a little excited. I mean, I didn't pre-order a phone. Maybe I'll just get one in the mail.
Yeah, some people got confirmation emails, were like, I didn't order an iPhone. Cool.
Yeah.
So anyway, AT&T has temporarily suspended pre-orders on their side of things. Apple has said, we're sorry. There's been an official apology come from Apple and AT&T. And right now, if you order an iPhone 4 through Apple, you're not going to get it until July 14th.
And at this rate, could be a lot later.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't hold them to that date at this point. So they got a lot of people wanting the iPhone 4. Couldn't handle it.
Right, yeah, the point. Estimates sounds like they were woefully short and didn't expect this kind of an outpouring. And I wonder if it's not that people were thinking, oh, maybe they'll finally announce Verizon. And then when they didn't announce Verizon, they went, all right, screw it, I'm going to go with AT&T. And they jumped on to order them. And there's also a lot of talk about what's going to happen to the AT&T network if they deliver this many phones on June 24th. Is it just going to get crushed under the data load? And speaking of which, I've got my iPad here, and I've been trying to get on the AT&T site for the last 3 hours, and it just says maintenance in progress. You can get onto the AT&T site through their website, but from the iPad, no joy.
They have a lot of stuff to work on right now. Can you imagine? They say they have a special team going through every order to make sure that the people who wanted to order an iPhone 4 are actually getting it. And people who didn't order an iPhone 4 aren't going to get it.
There are reports of Apple Store employees writing down information with pencils and paper. Yes, sir,
pencils,
your order's in.
Paper.
I know.
What is that?
Dinosaur stuff.
What
I
are
contacted
we?
AT&T to try and figure out if they had an official statement, and I didn't hear back from them, which is kind of unusual.
They're busy.
They're a little busy. They're doing a massive
They have the PR person working on combing through these records right now. It's all hands on deck over there, probably.
Tom, what do you think the over-under is on you getting your phone when you show up there on the 24th?
You know, that's a good question. I ordered mine yesterday through the Apple Store app. I got an email that said, show up in the Emeryville store at 7 a.m. Thursday, June 24th. We'll have yours reserved for you. I didn't get a second email saying, oh, wait, no. So I'm saying 83% chance that I get my iPhone 4.
Okay.
That's where I'm putting it at.
All right.
I like
We're
how they
for you, buddy.
Are. I like that you're just, you know, really being unspecific there.
No, I have calculated that scientifically, taking into account multivariate factors. So do you think this has anything to do with AT&T trying to fix the iPad email vulnerability? Because they say they pushed through a fix to their system. if they rushed through a fix, would that be somehow behind the cause of all of these other weird, all of this other weirdness with their ordering system?
I can't remember if it was Gizmodo or Engadget that was reporting they had an anonymous email from someone who worked for a vendor that works with AT&T on their website, and they said that the fix that they did put through was completely untested. And again, this is totally not corroborated reporting, so just take it with a grain of salt. But they said it was a desperate fix on some sort of security issue. It seems to me like it has to be related to this AT&T iPad breach.
Well, if you were hoping to order an iPhone 4 today and get it on June 24th, that's probably not going to happen. The only other option you have is to show up at the store or one of the authorized dealers on June 24th. And
don't leave until they give you one.
Be the first in line and hope to get one of the ones they have on hand.
Stand your ground.
Yeah.
So will there be people camping outside all night?
I think so.
And will they get phones or will they have had to pre-order?
No, I think, yes. They say they'll have some phones available day of for first come, first serve.
That's good.
So, although, at this point, I mean, shouldn't they be giving them to all the pre-order folks?
Well, yeah, you'd think so, right? Like, why
I mean,
do
if
that?
You, yeah, if, I mean, yeah. Of all the trouble that everyone had, you know, the folks that finally at 3 a.m., looks like I've gotten through. It was all worth it. Than to just have not get your phone and then have
and
someone
then
be able
email
to show
later.
Up day
yeah,
of.
Exactly.
I'd be a little miffed.
And I think it's going to be Walmart on Black Friday scenario. People rushing the doors. It's going to be ugly. It's going to be the bodyguard or don't go.
I'm going to be there at Emeryville on Thursday. Leo's thinking he might show up too to try to get one. So maybe we'll stream that.
Yeah. See who gets it.
Yeah.
Theirs.
We'll do the reserve versus first come first serve race.
Nice.
AT&T also in the news for a threat against net neutrality. Randall Stephenson saying, if Title II regulation looks imminent, this is the FCC reclassifying regulation of ISPs from Title I to Title II so that they have the ability to enforce some net neutrality regulations. Stephenson says, if this Title II regulation looks imminent, we have to reevaluate whether we put shovels in the ground, referring to U-verse, the IPTV broadband service that AT&T has been rolling out. So he's calling them out. He's like, you don't think it's going to hurt investment? We'll make it hurt investment. If you put net neutrality regulations in place, I'm going to shoot myself in the leg.
BS. they have to keep expanding the network.
If net neutrality lives, then U-verse gets it. And I think that's a really good description of this. But, you know, in one of the things pointed out is that AT&T has already stopped their investment growth in U-verse. They dropped it by like a 20% change last year. So in some senses, they are already going in this direction, pulling the plug on U-verse slowly but surely. So I think this is a lot of posturing.
Yeah, absolutely it is. It is definitely posturing because not only were they only slowing down, but the only person that it hurts is AT&T. If they're losing all of their telephone subscribers, which is what they say, and they need to move more towards the ISP side of things, then they need to continue to roll out U-verse as much as possible. So say, this is disingenuous at best.
They've got Comcast, they've got, with DOCSIS 3 and other providers. They've got Verizon Fios to contend with. I mean, they have to keep expanding their network. And yeah, I don't think net neutrality had anything to do with this. I don't think they'll even act. I think it's just a bluff.
And actually, in some ways, I wouldn't mind if they just stuck to being an ISP and got out of the television side of things.
Yeah, a couple of numbers just to put this in context. So they started U-verse in 2006. They have it in 22 states and 2 million customers, TV customers. So just giving you a sense of the scope of it, it's not huge. 2 million customers is not making a monster dent in their bottom line.
So they probably realized as it is that that they should just keep improving their existing network, which I believe is what they said they were going to do, focus on existing network and build this out as time allows.
Right. When they got the subsidies in the 90s, they said, we're going to focus on building the existing network. We're still waiting for that.
I'm just annoyed with AT&T in general.
Yeah.
Get it together.
Not having a good week, AT&T.
Really, how about some good news, AT&T?
Good news? Well, they just sold 600,000 phones on their first day. So in some
yeah,
sense,
I guess that's true.
Good news for the shareholders.
Cell phone customer numbers back up.
Yeah. AOL has some good news. They finally found a buyer for Bebo, the struggling social network at one time thought to be the heir to Facebook. has not turned out that way. AOL had bought it. Everyone wondered why, right, what they were going to do with it. And now they have sold it for, I haven't seen a number
I believe
yet,
they sold it to
$850 million.
No, that's what they acquired it for.
They bought it for $850 million. They sold it to Criterion Capital Hedge Fund, which only has $1 billion under management. So they ain't spending anywhere near $850 million if all they have is $1 billion in total. So this is a monster fire sale.
No more Bebo under AOL.
AOL is also
not going to change my life
investing a lot of energy into Livestream, just kind of their all-in-one instant messaging, geolocation. It's actually a pretty great iPad app. But this obviously has to do with that as well. Internally, they just think that they can do something better than what they got Bebo for.
We mentioned yesterday that June 23rd will be a day that Motorola and Verizon and Adobe are going to get together and make a big announcement. We presume it might be the Droid X, and Gadget got to get their hands on the Droid X. 4.3-inch handset. They say it's got a front-facing camera. It's got a 4.3-inch screen with 854 by 480 resolution, Android 2.1, Moto Blur, 8-megapixel camera, 720p video. This all sounds very familiar.
Yeah, it sounds like the Evo, except that it's bigger because they have side-by-side
even bigger than the Evo
on Engadget. Now, please just, I merely have an opinion, but the
how's
Evo,
how's it going to feel in your hand? That's what everyone wants to know, Sarah.
Little too big for my hand, Becky. Little too big, even bigger. In fact, I don't know who's got, is like the baggy pants back. I mean, who can care? Why are the phones getting bigger and bigger after sort of small? Did they get too small?
I think that's small hand chauvinism. I think these phones have been too small for me. When I held the Evo, I was like, this is a good phone. This,
did it feel, yeah, does the Evo feel
it
about right to
totally
you?
Totally fine to me.
Well,
I understand.
You don't feel compelled to now carry a man purse, a European carry-all for your phone? I think this is what the trend is going to lead to, Tom.
I want to see how tight that Droid X is in your back pocket, and then we'll talk. You may need
a never carry it in the back pocket.
Oh.
Yeah.
You guys don't do that anymore?
No, yeah, jacket pocket.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. I thought you meant front pocket. I was like, geez, Tom.
Is that a Droid X in your front pocket? Yes, it is. Now
it's
stop
huge.
Right there.
You know, two things that kind of interested me about this is that the dock is going to have an HDMI port out, and that it has this funky keyboard that recognizes when you press two keys simultaneously.
Yeah, so now Sarah and I were wondering, what the hell is that good for?
And then Ken, who works with us, said, well, what about Shift, S for capital? And I went, oh, yeah, I hadn't even thought about that. You know, here I am thinking, what, am I going to type all the letters of my name simultaneously? Who would want to do that? But I guess it's good.
Maybe it's better for typos. It creates fewer typos. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. I like the Shift.
Anyway, check it out at Engadget.com. We'll have the link in the show notes if you want to take a look at the Droid X. People are getting pretty excited about it. It's a nice looking phone.
The largest.
I don't like Moto Blur though.
Phone. It's also got sort of a hump on the back, a whale.
We also don't know what its radiation level is, but thankfully San Francisco has made it the law that the retailers will have to tell us. The city just passed a law, the first in the U.S., requiring that the specific absorption rate, that's the rate at which energy is absorbed by the body of every phone, be posted next to it in legible letters so that you can know
11-point font size too.
What the specific absorption rate is of all these phones.
Well,
but what does that mean?
That's exactly the question that everyone's going to have. And, I just see, a mother buying maybe their teenager their first cell phone, right? It's like, it's Sammy's birthday. We're going to go get him a cell phone at Best Buy. Well, I'm going to get him the phone with the least amount of radiation because radiation is really bad. I mean, but it's confusing because, first of all, there have been so many studies on this. No one's sure what's going on with the radiation. I mean, there's obviously radiation that's going out, but then you get into weird specifics like there's ionized radiation and non-ionized radiation, and the non-ionized is supposed to be less dangerous because it doesn't actually change the it's like cell structure inside people's brains. So there's less chance of, you getting brain cancer. And that's what cell phones are designated under, the non-ionized radiation. But nobody really knows. And we probably need another 30 years of research anyway. So really, you get all these numbers, what are you going to do? You're just going to kind of freak out and not know why.
Yeah. I was interested in the comparative numbers, too, because it does create a hierarchy amongst phones. And so, you know, the BlackBerry's put out 1.5 watts per kilogram. The FCC threshold is 1.6 watts per kilogram. And your microwave from a 5-centimeter distance puts out 0.25 watts per kilogram. So it did make me kind of, okay, if they're going to quantify this, maybe I better go look at it. But I completely agree. I think this is really confusing for consumers. And without conclusive data about how this really plays out, come on, San Francisco.
Yeah, essentially what they've said is the FCC says that anything under 1.6 is okay to sell. And so all of these phones are going to be under 1.6 watts per kilogram. Studies have not shown definitively that cell phones have or have not an effect on our brains. The studies are mixed all over the place. They've trended towards saying there's probably not a big effect, but we don't know for sure. This number is useless. So all it's going to do is fool people into thinking, oh, the BlackBerry 8820 is dangerous. Look at that big SAR rating.
Yeah, I'm going to be safe.
Yeah, I'm going to be safe and buy a Nokia 7710. Well, no, it doesn't make any difference.
Enjoy.
And have fun with your Nokia 7710. It's very low radiation. All right. Thank you, San Francisco, for protecting us from something we have nothing about.
Yes.
Redbox has been in the news before because they're that kiosk where you can go and rent a DVD for a buck.
Yeah, and then the front of supermarkets. I've never actually used one myself, but they're pretty popular.
I haven't used one either. But they got in trouble with Fox, Universal, and Warner Brothers, who made them agree not to allow rentals for the first 28 days that a DVD is on sale, the theory being that they would sell more DVDs if you couldn't rent them from Redbox for a dollar,
right.
Which I always found to be kind of silly.
Kind of silly because, you know, and we were kind of talking about this earlier today. It's like, are the people who buy DVDs, which obviously cost more than a rental, the same people who rent DVDs? I mean, there are a lot more people who rent. I don't buy DVDs ever, but I rent them all the time. You know, so it's like, you know, these are two different markets, really.
Well, Viacom.
It's a pretty big market, though, because they have over 25,000 of these kiosks, and they say they're renting 750 million movies a year. And they're huge in college dorms and in sort of places besides just your 7-Eleven and your supermarket. So they're doing a pretty good business. You know, they're also, they're owned by Coinstar.
That makes sense.
It's a really interesting business model.
Viacom, who you wouldn't normally think of as friendly to your rights, has actually said, you know what, Redbox, we're going to provide you with new releases on the same day they go on sale under a long-term agreement. They apparently joined Sony, Lionsgate, and Walt Disney in this procedure because all of these companies apparently figured out, you know what, it doesn't have any effect on the sales of DVDs, and we're just missing out on 28 days of a dollar rentals.
Yeah, exactly. Warner said, Paramount said, we did do a study, and you know what? We're still selling a lot of DVDs. It's not really making a dent, so why not just throw a little goodwill at the customers, and you guys can rent them on the same day. No biggie.
Applause.
So I don't really know
Paramount.
What the other half of the guys have to worry about. I don't know.
Yeah.
Let me rent my DVD. Then again, I'm not really so worried about renting things the day that they're released. So maybe
it's just silly. Yeah.
It's all silly.
The XPRIZE has gotten us many things in its day. It's promoted rockets to go into space, like SpaceX. We were talking about that before the show, talking about it on the show a couple weeks ago. And now they're considering new X Prizes to be put out there. One of them is an artificial intelligence physician that you could access from your smartphone.
This is weird.
Well, you know what? I feel that it is really encouraging a margin of error. Because what if, you know, for example, they use an example is like, you got a rash on your leg, take a picture, send it to the AI doctor and maybe get a diagnosis.
Poison ivy or smallpox,
what
doc?
What if the lighting's kind of off and you get something really bad back?
Exactly.
I think yourself into the ER.
Yeah, I think most doctors would say that cameras, especially cell phone cameras as they are now, would not be enough for the doctor himself or herself to diagnose the skin rash from a photo you could take in bad lighting by yourself.
Right, right.
I think we're going to see a ton of things like this, though. I've already gotten pitches for apps that help you diagnose why you're having back pain. I got a pitch yesterday from a hospital in Cincinnati where they're using cameras and electronic stethoscopes in the ambulances to communicate with the ER docs as patients are en route. We are going to see big innovations in this field as sort of – high-speed data networks evolve. And I completely agree with you. Like, for significant diagnoses, this is just not, is ridiculous. But for the little stuff, and so much of what is bogging down the healthcare system is the little stuff, this might actually be a way to lighten the load.
Doing a little question and answer thing, I can like, oh, I've got a pain in my chest. Is it heartburn or a heart attack? And it can ask you some questions, and you can talk to it and sort of, you know, answer the questions, and it can understand the answers and kind of run through the diagnostics tree. I could see that working really well with an AI. The pictures thing.
Right, the pictures.
Gets a little
Will your cell phone fuzzy. Doctor be in network?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
the AI.
You know, this...
right.
Yeah,
how soon? I'm sorry, that AI is out of network.
How soon before the insurance carrier says, you want your cell phone to diagnose you? We don't cover that.
How good will the cough recognition be?
Actually, it'll
be.
Go the other way, Eric. They'll be like, oh, you want to see a real doctor? No, you have to consult the AI smartphone doctor first
and then get a referral.
But I'm telling you what, as a new mom, this is exactly what the quote-unquote advice nurse is. You know, when you have new kids, your pediatrician gives you a number for the 24-hour advice nurse. They have a script that they walk you through, and it's exactly that, a decision tree, and it's pretty much the same thing. So they then make the decision whether you go to the doctor or not. So I don't see a huge difference in terms of the little stuff.
Some of the script stuff, yeah. Definitely.
Why does it even have to be cell phones? Why can't they just be a web page or a piece of paper? Because you're even talking for not only just third world countries, but also here.
Well, I think because phones are so prevalent in developing nations, mm-hmm. That it's a way to get a lot of information into people's hands quickly where they don't actually have full-on computers. So I could see where that might be a benefit.
Leapfrog scenario with the mobile devices. I mean, there's so much more saturation, even in the U.S. amongst communities that just skipped, you know, laptops and computers completely. I see that as being viable too.
YouTube is adding a cloud-based video editor. This is very similar to what they already have on phones, where you can trim the beginning and end and pieces to kind of make sure that your video is tight. But it's a cool little tool.
It's a cool tool, and a bunch of people have been reporting it, and everyone goes, now make no mistake, this is no Final Cut Pro killer, which is, I mean, I think that's good because Final Cut Pro is a really difficult program to use, you know, especially if you don't have 30 hours of training under your belt. And, I think for the majority of YouTube users, nothing that robust is even going to help you out. It's only going to confuse you. But if you can trim a little or add a little music underneath, you know, you could spice up your video at least a little bit. And, you know, it gives another layer of fun, really. And I read something like 40,000 YouTube-approved music tracks are also available as part of this editing system. 40,000? I mean... Yeah, you know, you can always tell when somebody doesn't have a good music library when they're using one of those like GarageBand loops. There's like 10 of them that you can get for free with the software, and you know, it kind of you go, oh, yeah, the GarageBand thing. Okay, you guys haven't really thought this one through. 40,000 different music tracks, or you know, at least audio tracks. That's really robust.
It's about time we got a benefit from all this filtering and rights wrangling. You
right,
know,
yeah. Give me another option.
Seriously, that's pretty nice. All right,
I think this sounds fun. I'm certainly excited to play around with it a little bit.
E3 is still going on. All the big announcements have already happened. But there's some gameplay video of Valve's Portal 2. If we can go down to the second one on the page, not the first one, Eric. Is that cool?
Stand by.
Does that work? Because that's got more of the gameplay stuff. The first one has the trailer of Portal 2 that's been seen. But Portal 2 is the successor, obviously, to Portal. And GLaDOS is back. But everything is destroyed. So you're wandering around in ruins. And the gameplay looks really cool. Let's just imagine a world where do you guys play Portal? Neither one of you guys play Portal, do you?
Nope.
No. I'm excited about this, so we're going to show a little bit of that now.
Well, let's see if you can excite us.
You can send the tractor beam through a portal and then also objects or yourself through the portal.
Tractor beam. Yeah. Check it out. Okay, so this is the new look. And the fun thing about Portal is that you use this gun to actually create holes that you can warp through to other areas without being linear. And now they're adding this little tractor beam thing.
So just shooting for shooting's sake. That does sound fun. You don't even
Well, no, you're shooting for transportation's sake. You're like...
Right. For puzzle solving.
What are you in?
You're in the ruins of the lab from the first portal. And I'm trying to figure out how this tractor beam thing works, but I think what happens is you create a portal, and the tractor beam will go through it, show up somewhere else, and then see how you use the tractor beam to actually catch that falling box.
Did you see the speed goo? The orange goo that lets you
jet down surfaces?
Yeah, we actually had that on our live coverage. Should I pull that up, or I don't know how much longer you want to spend on this.
That's probably enough. We'll have a link in the show notes.
Exactly. Practically bouncing out of your chairs.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, twit.tv for that.
and don't forget, you should know that the Ulysses comic is back in the Apple store, the one with the genitalia, the very small cartoon genitalia. So just in time for Bloomsday, June 16th, you can get the Ulysses James Joyce comic. Thank goodness for that. On to the calendar. Becky, what do we got on the docket?
I got a lot of stuff. Number one, tonight is MythBusters' 25 favorite moments from their entire series. They're doing a big special. I don't know what time it's on, but check your local listings. And amazingly, it's Discovery Channel's 25th birthday. They've been on the air for 25 years. I kind of can't believe that. Next up, this is kind of interesting to me. June 28th, Virgin Mobile is having a mystery event. And they say they're launching their newest broadband product. Let me read this here. It's small, it's sleek, it will revolutionize how people connect to and pay for the internet. And I have no idea what it is, but I'm guessing, Tom, I bet this is like a MiFi hotspot that ties into the Virgin network that is pay-as-you-go, which
that
I think
would make
be
sense.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, so it's because Virgin's good with the pay-as-you-go stuff.
Yeah, I think that could be actually a really good way to get this into the hands of folks who couldn't afford kind of the MiFi costs, which were pretty significant. Finally, do not forget that Sunday is Father's Day. And I did my Good Morning America Father's Day segment this morning. That's why I'm at the lovely Red Carpet Club here in San Francisco. I just got off a plane from New York. But lots of Twit viewers gave me suggestions. So I did, in fact, have the Mug Boss. This is
I love
basically
the Mug Boss.
You put this on the coffee cup on your desk that holds all your pens and rulers and stuff, and it's kind of like Carhartt's for your coffee mug. And I think it just takes the office geeky dad and gives him a little dose of manly man, and who doesn't need that on the desk? So that's one thing. Number two idea, this is the Gorilla Torch. So you may have seen the Gorilla Pod, which you can use right up here. It had a mount for a digital camera so that you could bend these little legs and put it on anything to take pictures. Well, this is the Gorilla Torch, so it's got a flashlight in here. I thought that was a really great idea. And, we also suggested a subscription to Make Magazine, $35 for the year. And that was another one of the Twit TNT viewer suggestions. And most of this stuff we got on Amazon. So just a few ideas, your last chance to get a Father's Day gift. That's your calendar.
Thanks, TNT folks, for all the Father's Day ideas. Rush out and get them quickly because Father's Day is Sunday. All right, let's go to the voicemails. Our first one comes from Kristen, who's out in Boston and has a recommendation for a World Cup app.
Hi, Tom. This is Kristen from Boston, Mass. The other day, you were discussing apps that World Cup enthusiasts should download, and I wanted to suggest another one. Why not learn some Afrikaans? Transparent Language makes a great app for the iPhone called Bikey, which stands for Before You Know It. And you can even get a free version at bikey.com, which is available in about 70 additional languages. Thanks, Tom. I love your show. Keep up the great podcasting.
Hey, thanks, Kristen. Always like a good app recommendation.
Yeah.
And from a chick. Chicks are apparently like all about this show. Who knew? We have at least 3 women viewers. Just kidding.
They're all over this
and
show.
And learning Afrikaans.
Yeah.
Via apps. And
impressive.
And we do have a South African viewer. Remember Rinus, who sent in an email previously?
Exactly. We're all over the place.
Global.
On this world.
260-TNT-SHOW is the number if you would like to call and leave a voicemail. You can also send us email to tnt@twit.tv. Got one here from Kevin. Says, on yesterday's show, you guys talked about the race between Apple and Google to get their music into the cloud. One might argue that Microsoft is ahead of both Apple and Google in this race. You can stream the Zune catalog from any web browser with a Zune Pass. At E3 2010, it was announced that the Zune catalog will be able to be streamed to your Xbox 360 with a Zune Pass. And Microsoft has the Kin phones that can currently stream the Zune catalog with a Zune Pass over 3G. But my point is that Microsoft has a music streaming technology for phones available right now. Windows Phone 7 devices will also be able to stream the Zune catalog with the Zune Pass when they are available later this year. The question will be, can the Zune platform gain any traction in the market with its availability on the 360, Phone 7, and Kin? So that's that is definitely the question. Will people actually use the Zune?
And, I mean, I think Zune Marketplace on the Kinect is going to be interesting. It will encourage a certain segment of the market to jump on board. And it's just dawning on me, too, this whole Kin phone, Kinect. Why does Microsoft want Kin? Why?
Well, it's really? Because your Kin phone is connected to your Kin, I don't know.
Leg bone.
They, I don't know. They were, they, sure. You know what? Those were the trademarks that weren't already taken. That's, I think that's why we get so many weird names for things these days.
Kin, Kinectic. Mm-hmm. Kindle.
Yeah, Kindle. They should buy that.
It's a popular three letters.
Folks, don't forget this episode is brought to you by Ford and Voice Activated Sync. A problem for folks these days is keeping your hands on the wheel. I experienced this today several times on my drive into work. People talking on the phone. There was a guy, I swear he must have been text messaging. He was weaving all over the place in front. I kept seeing him looking down.
Oh, it makes me so mad.
You don't need to live that way. You don't need to fall prey to those temptations. If you have Ford Sync in your car, you can play music or podcast or audiobooks with your voice. You can make Bluetooth calls hands-free. You just say, you know, call Sarah, and it dials her up for you. You can get turn-by-turn directions, 911 assist, and more. Sync is available exclusively on Ford Lincoln and Mercury vehicles.
Like this Mustang I'm showing you that I ordered I reserved a Kia for when I went down to
like
LA. I know. This is the car I got. I got the Mustang, and it had the Sync in it, and it was amazing. I was able to get my phone synced up. Boom. I didn't even look at the manual. It was definitely, and I haven't driven a car that has built-in Bluetooth support that's that robust, and it was very cool.
So be safe. Keep your hands on the wheel and learn more about Sync by going to SyncMyRidePodcast.com. Sync is standard in some Ford Lincoln Mercury models and optional in others, so check it out.
Should we read another email?
Yeah, let's do.
This next one comes from Reggie Davis, who loves the show and says, so now we have the Galaxy S coming out. And I think they mean Galaxy 5. Is there such a thing as having too many devices? Is it possible that Android has crossed the line from having a nice variety of handsets to having indistinguishable blur of devices, starting to be like boy bands in the 90s? Hey, it was fine when it was just Backstreet Boys, NSYNC, New Kids on the Block, and New Edition. New Edition was well before the 90s, Reggie, I'm sorry to say. You could still sort of tell them apart. However, by the time you got to O-Town and LFO, it was like, enough already. Is Eric Schmidt becoming the Lou Pearlman of the mobile industry? Reggie, I mean, I guess he has to get into a Ponzi scheme and go to jail for 25 years in order to make that comparison. I don't even know who LFO is. I guess it's a boy band.
I miss that boy band. But I totally agree about his point with Android devices. I mean, especially after that Computex conference. That's the nice lady here at the red carpet club walking behind me. Don't mind that. But I felt like there was
Cameo.
A real glut of Android devices. And it is hard to keep track of what's new, what's happening, who has what. And the simplicity, when they're competing with the Apple products, the simplicity of iPad, iPhone, compared to the glut of Android devices, I agree.
All right, let's finish up. We got one more email. Becky, you want to read this one from Dustin?
Right. Dustin. This is Dustin Clark from Franklin, Tennessee. I'm writing in to say I enjoyed your coverage of E3 and the different views of the new Kinect and Move. One thing that disturbed me, though, is how the mainstream media throws out the term hardcore gamer when referring to players who don't get excited about moving around while playing games. I own a Wii and an Xbox 360 and consider myself a hardcore gamer, but I really enjoy my Wii for the aspect of motion-activated games. I think these so-called hardcore gamers need to be referred to as lazy gamers or old-fashioned gamers and not hardcore, because hardcore gamers embrace innovation, and innovation is what keeps games interesting. Just my thoughts. What do you think? Guys?
I think that's pretty funny to be like, you know what? If you don't like the Kinect, you're lazy. You're
get up off the
fat
couch.
And lazy, and
that's
you're a slob.
That's what a hardcore gamer is.
And the irony is, I think the hardcore gamers have the softest cores because I doubt that they do many sit-ups.
No core strength.
2 points, Eric.
They're no core gamers.
Oh.
I think it all
strengthen
is,
your hardcore.
You know, to each their own as far as gaming goes. If you game a lot, I think you're a hardcore gamer. You don't have to game certain kinds of games.
I think he's got a good point about the innovation. Like, you know what? If you're a hardcore gamer, you shouldn't just dismiss something.
Yeah, you respect it for what it is.
Because of Kinectimals. Right. You know, there's probably lots of other great uses you'll be able to put it to. So
Skittles the Tiger.
If you play Plants vs. Zombies for 6 hours a day, I think it's more addictive personality than hardcore gamer. I mean, I'm not saying this myself. I'm an addict and I need help. Yes, I am saying it. But I just think that there is a differentiation if you live the lifestyle, you're a hardcore gamer, whereas you can also just get sucked into a game and that can still be a casual experience.
All right. So there's room for everyone in this gaming tent. Let's just all try to get along.
Game together.
And frag each other to death online.
Pull out each other's spines.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for watching. That's it for today's show. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv. You can also phone us, 260-TNT-SHOW. That's our phone number. And, of course, you can find all the details about the show, including links to the wiki where our show notes are, at twit.tv/TNT. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.